Hello and welcome to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Segal. I'm Greta Johnson here with Trisha Bobita and Peter Segal.
We are talking this week about episode 4 of season 6, Book of the Stranger.
Hello. I realize it was incumbent upon me to say something so as to indicate my presence.
Hello. That's
I'm assuming
your clever
people
thing
were
today?
Worried. Look, we're halfway into the second season we've been doing this, and every time it says Peter says something clever, I was going to go dry eventually. So today is the day. I got nothing.
So before we get to it, we do have a note about a little bit of a format breaker later on in this episode. Instead of taking your voicemails, we will actually be talking with David Peterson, who is, who I like to call the Dothraki dude, the guy who creates the languages for Game of Thrones.
Yes, indeed. I was lucky enough to see David give a presentation at a conference I went to and thought it was just the coolest. So we got him to talk to us.
So yeah, that's coming up later on this episode. But first, let's get to it with our show recap, shall we?
Let's start at the wall, because lots of interesting things are happening at the wall.
Oh my gosh.
It's all happening at the
wall. I was so
wall.
Impressed. Man, like within 4 minutes, Jon Snow and Sansa were talking to each other.
I know.
And I was just like, oh my God, this is actually really exciting.
Were you like kind of moved?
Yeah.
Because as if you, and I did again, watch the little post-episode show with the showrunners, they point out something that we all knew. This is the first time that they have seen each other since pretty much episode 1, season 1.
Yeah.
And it is the first time that any Stark has been in the same room, and I know they were actually outside, but go with me here, since the Red Wedding, when Catelyn and her son got killed together. It's been that long since the Starks have seen each other.
We never should have left Winterfell.
Don't you wish we could go back to the day we left? I want to scream at myself, don't go, you idiot.
How could we know?
And I love that they instantly sort of fall into this sibling chemistry.
Can I ask you guys a question? They did this thing, and it's very, very standard in film and TV, which is like, here am I, here are you. We haven't seen each other in a long time. We gaze at each other. We gaze at each other in silence. And then we suddenly fall into an embrace.
Uh-huh.
That's how it's done.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever seen anybody in life actually do that? And do you think that anybody in life would actually do that? Because if I like you, I'd run up and I'd hug you. If I didn't like you, I wouldn't. But I don't think I'd go, do I hug her? Do I hug her? Do I hug her? I don't know. Okay.
I took it just to be that they've actually physically changed a lot and grown up a lot. And so they were kind of trying to suss out, is that really Jon? Is that really Sansa from far away? I think, you know, they hadn't seen each other in 5 years.
Or something.
So, something like that,
ish.
Roughly in the show. Ish. Time in the show is ish.
I don't know.
But I think there was a little bit of like, I thought you were dead. Well, I was worried maybe you were dead, too, that you know, nothing is as it seems anymore.
I will also say this. They then did, again, the standard thing you do, which is you cut to a scene where it indicates they have spent however many necessary hours telling each other what they've been going through.
Right, right.
In their conversation, they then obviously show knowledge of, like, you did this, you did that. That would have been an interesting conversation to listen to, even though we had seen all the events they would have been discussing. And then you wouldn't believe I met this nice redhead girl. Really? Did you? I was raped by this. It would have been a call. It would have been.
I have some battle wounds. They'll never hear, but they'll never heal. But never worry. I'm also alive and shouldn't be.
It would have been a great spinoff series. Just watching them have dinner. My dinner with Jon Snow.
I kept getting really nervous.
They had soup.
I kept worrying that they were actually going to kiss. Like, there, it seemed like too much chemistry almost. I was like, is this going to get weird?
There was also that great moment where actually Sansa said, and this to me may be the greatest Sansa moment ever.
I spent a lot of time thinking about what an ass I was to you. I wish I could change everything.
We were children.
I was awful, just admit it.
You were occasionally awful. I'm sure I can't have been great fun always sulking in the corner while the rest of you played.
Can you forgive me?
There's nothing to forgive.
Forgive me.
Right. All right, I forgive you.
I was kind of awful.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Sansa. Yeah, and although she was apparently referring to her behavior as a child when she was haughty and standoffish and miserable, she's been pretty much awful almost up until this moment. So she could have said, I was kind of awful during the first 4.5 seasons. And we would have said, yes, you were.
Yes, you were.
And then I love that Jon Snow said, yeah, and I was kind of brooding. Yeah, that's probably what he did. He was brooding.
Yeah, and I love
self-knowledge. Thank you.
They're becoming adult. They're becoming self-aware of the fact that all teenagers are terrible, including themselves as teenagers. And I love that she's the one now with the sort of battle plan in her head that she's the one that wants to go back to Winterfell. She wants to take an army back and beat Ramsay. And Jon needs some convincing.
Yeah.
You're the son of the last true warden of the North. Northern families are loyal. They'll fight for you if you ask. A monster has taken our home and our brother. We have to go back to Winterfell and save them both.
It is interesting to note that at the end of the last episode, as Trisha had predicted, Jon said, I'm done. Snow out.
Mic dropped.
And literally, I thought he was heading to the gate at the end of the last episode.
Yeah, I thought
episode.
He was going to leave right then.
No, but he was just going back to his chambers, which is like definitely the second set of this sitcom. Meanwhile, in Jon's chambers, and and what was going to keep him there? What was going to change his mind? Sansa, of all people. Sansa, the most passive, helpless, annoying victim in this entire epic TV series, is now the person who spurs to action. Yay, he said, with potential apologies to Nicole Cliff. Never mind.
We're also seeing what I am thinking is probably the relationship I'm most excited to see blossom on the show now, which is Tormund Redbeard.
Oh, that was hilarious. There were like three really great jokes. And that was the first one of Tormund Redbeard just staring at Brienne and chewing on whatever the hell he's chewing on.
It was like a leg of a pig or something.
Awesome. That was and Brienne just sort of going, what the hell? That was hilarious.
But she's very fancy compared to the wildling woman.
Oh, I know. And tall.
Very
and tall. He's been looking for a woman all these years his own height.
I think also it's worth noting how many times Jon smiled in those first couple scenes.
Well, it's nice to see his sister.
You know, I mean, he has been so serious for so long.
Some sisters and brothers like each other, Greta. Perhaps you've become aware of this.
I also think it's funny that post-dead Jon has a different hairstyle. That instead of the crazy curls, we now have this slicked back sort
he's
of
got
mafioso
a man,
thing.
He's got a man bun
He's got like a hipster
on.
Man bun
he's
going
got a
on.
Man, he actually looks like he's... Like, where are you going to go, Jon Snow? I'm going to go to Brooklyn. I'm going to live in Williamsburg, ride a fixie. That's really, he's set to go.
Going south to Brooklyn.
So, should we head to the Vale now?
Oh, before we leave, there was an interesting, I think, foreshadowing of stuff to come. When Davos goes up to... Melisandre, and says, what happened to Shireen?
Meaning he
doesn't know what happened to Shireen. Mm. And when he finds out what happened to Shireen, I had her burned alive at the stake. I think Davos is going to be mad.
Yeah.
But we deferred that moment because just at the moment when she was going to have to say something, Brienne walked up and said, I know what you two did and I am not happy about it, i.e. the Shadow Baby.
I saw the blood magic, and I don't forget or forgive.
Forgive is what she said. So therefore, we are indicating that those three characters have some tension they're going to need to resolve, potentially violently. Davos is going to find out about Shireen, and he's going to be mad, and Brienne has not forgotten about the blood baby.
I kind of thought, I mean, I guess the I will not forgive thing is indicative of something, but, I mean, the fact that she killed Stannis was sort of like... Like, that to me sort of seemed like, well, like,
she really
I got you anyway.
She
you
really know? Liked Renly. She really
yeah, that's true.
Liked
that's
Renly.
True.
I don't think she's going to be like, we'll call it even. Not Brienne's style.
Fair enough.
She
just
doesn't
saying,
let
that,
things
that's,
go.
That's a potential problem coming up.
Yeah.
I hope.
Okay.
So in the Vale, we see yet another
He's back!
Character.
Oh, my God. He was shooting an arrow poorly last time we saw him,
yeah,
wasn't
I think
he?
There,
or no,
there,
he was
there was a joke about
sword
his he was sword fighting. Remember, I said, just like me, I'm like,
Oh, yeah.
And now they're trying in the archery, and it's not going well. the name of that character is Lord Jon Royce, by the way. Jon. You know, there you are. He's your favorite character, Greta.
Mine?
Yes.
Why?
Because you like yawns.
You do.
Oh, yawn. I understand.
Yeah, there you are. It's
I was thinking
pun.
Yawn with like a silent J, you know?
He was, I don't know who that actor is. I recognize him, but he's a pretty sad little lord. It's like you threaten him a little. He's like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But here
but
comes.
But also the Moondor. I mean, come on.
The Moondor is scary,
you
but
know?
He's a lord. Presumably he has soldiers too.
Right.
So he's not going to be intimidated by a bunch of guys. And the unblinking Peter Baelish.
Littlefinger's back.
Littlefinger's back. And I don't think he has blinked once in this entire television show. I am Peter Baelish and my eyes are fixed open.
It is time to join the fray.
Oh, my goodness.
He was pretty dramatic about that.
I mean, I was super. Did you see that playing out that way?
What exactly?
I mean, the fact that that he was able to go to the Vale and get a bunch of troops to help save Sansa. Like, they're going to go up to Winterfell and help fight this fight,
you
right?
You think?
Yeah.
I mean, because he's always in it for himself. Remember that Lord Jon Royce was telling your favorite character, Lord Jon, was telling the truth. He said, you were going off to Winterfell to marry Sansa to this guy. Now you want to fight him? And then in that cool way he has, Baelish just lied. He has that voice. You know, that's not what happened. Anyway, but he's trite. So our Littlefinger is playing 8 different games at once. And who knows what he's thinking? And who knows what he wants still? That
power.
Still remains a mystery.
He wants power.
I know.
I think he is still in love with Sansa.
Ugh.
And I think he wants to save her.
No.
You think,
I think
you,
he's going to prove himself the
some
good
nobility?
Guy. Yeah. Well, he always loved Catelyn so much.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. I was watching... this is what I was thinking about because I was in some sort of vintage store in Boston.
Where are we going with this?
We'll get there. And they had all these like vintage or overstock stuff. And one of them was some souvenirs from Game of Thrones. And they had house banners. But the only banner they had was House Baelish. And I was looking at it. It's like, that is the lamest house. I'm not going to buy that.
What's
I would have. I totally would have bought any other house pretty
I mean,
much.
You are Peter.
Well, he's like a little, it's a little bird, I believe.
It's a little bird. Oh.
And,
it's like a little...
And the reason Baelish is lame is because Baelish, I think, of all the characters, is the one who's the most bloodless. And by that I mean that he has nothing except like this pure motivation for power. You don't know why. Like Ned was noble. And Robert Baratheon was dissolute, and Cersei is trying to save her children, and she's vain, and she's angry. Even Ramsay Bolton is a lunatic. But all you get from Peter Baelish is he wants to be king, but you don't know why.
I feel like he's the nerd.
The nerd?
I think of him as the Snape. A little.
Yeah.
That, like, he's playing all the sides, and so even he's a little confused about where his loyalties lie, and he's taking care of the child of the woman he loved out of duty, but also for some plot.
He didn't love her.
Catelyn?
No, no, no. Oh, I see. I thought you were talking about Lord Iron, Little Robin
no,
with
no.
a limp bow.
No,
you were
everything
talking
he
about
does
Sansa is
he loved Catelyn since he was a child, right?
Right?
And she rejected him. And he designed his own sigil because he wasn't actually from a noble house.
Right.
And so there's a little bit of a, like, just an inferiority complex thing with him
yeah.
that's sort of like, I'll show all you rich pricks who were mean to me
right.
when I was a kid and who wouldn't marry me.
Well, I see the Snape comparison.
Littlefinger as Snape. Let us know on Twitter if you agree or disagree.
Yes, exactly.
I like it.
Oh,
this reminds me, actually, someone tweeted at us. I haven't had time to really look at it, but they like assigned all of the Game of Thrones characters to the different houses. Did you guys spot this one on our little feed?
Oh, to the different Harry Potter houses?
Point,
yeah, yeah.
I think at this point, instead of like engaging in that, I think we just say to the people who did that, go outside. Get some exercise. Go for a bike ride.
And listen to the podcast while you're doing
exactly.
those things.
All right, Peter, that can be your new task for the next week. Just tell everybody to go outside.
Go outside.
When they correct your
errors. Stop watching television and listening to podcasts about television. Get some fresh
Don't stop.
Air.
Keep doing this.
Where are we going next?
Marine.
Was that lame? I almost yawned. I thought that was pretty lame. I thought that, first of all, who was that guy who said, I bought you for a silver stag or whatever
it was?
Oh,
yeah.
He was the pirate guy that caught them when they were headed in the other direction, right? And
right.
he convinced them
now
to
he's
not
there,
kill him.
Now he's there as a...
representative of the slavers.
Yeah, he got real importance.
I see. That seems odd. We've also given up all pretense that these guys don't speak English.
Yeah, yeah, also a lot of eyeliner.
Oh, yeah.
These are the things I notice now that I watch on a television instead of on my phone.
Uh-huh.
The actors playing the slavers, a lot of eyeliner.
Yeah,
there is a thriving cosmetics business in Slaver's Bay. Maybe they should move into that as opposed to slavery.
That's
and I also
idea.
Thought, I mean, the notion that Tyrion would make him a deal, like you can keep your slaves for 7 years. And they're like, oh, well, keeps them for 7 years or what?
Yeah. Mm.
What is Tyrion going to do to any of those people? Now, he doesn't know this, as we do, but there's a Dothraki army coming their way now.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know that. What leverage does he possibly have over these three other cities, who we have already been told that after Dany has moved on to Meereen, the Masters reasserted their control. So they're in charge. There's a war going on, and Tyrion basically gave them acceptable terms of surrender. I don't see that.
Yeah, I mean, they did say that what they want is for the mercenaries and the dragons and Dany to leave.
Right.
So they are aware of the dragons being a potential threat, but that's the only thing that I guess is the unspoken
Yeah, know? I think before that becomes an actual, you know, leverage you can use, the dragon has to fly around and burn some stuff, which he hasn't done yet. I mean, you need to sort of a little show of force here before they're going to be bowing, accepting anything.
Right,
that
that's
suggests.
The thing. I mean, if she already took over the cities with the dragons, like, she doesn't have any exceptional strength or power beyond what she had when she ineffectively took them over the first time around,
right.
You know?
And as far as they know, not only does she not have any more power than she did, or military power, any kind of power, she's not even there. So why are they agreeing to anything? When they were, like, stroking their pointy beards and going, that's an interesting offer. I'm like, no, you wouldn't be.
Yeah, that whole scene I thought was unnecessary.
Yes.
I did like the moment right before it where you see, again, sort of how out of touch Tyrion is, where he says,
"My own recent experience with slavery has taught me the horrors of that institution."
How many days were you a slave?
Long enough to know.
Not long enough to understand.
I did write down the phrase silver hair and tits, just because I did kind of like that.
Somebody said that?
Mm-hmm.
Just because your master has silver hair and tits doesn't mean she's not your master.
Yeah, that there you go. Trish
that's,
is
that's,
so good.
That's epigrammatic. If I was graduating from high school, I would put that as my yearbook quote.
Would you,
I would.
Peter?
Probably.
Okay, good.
It's an interesting aphorism, but that's a good point.
So should we move along to the hillside?
What do you mean, where they were climbing up to yet another?
Yeah, totally.
Perch to,
yeah,
I was wondering about that, because they had
I
a whole
it.
Business about, poor Jorah. And then they get up there and they look and they see the establishing shot and he says, well, over there, that's where they are. And then over here is the Eastern Market, over there is the Western Market. He couldn't have just drawn that in the sand when they were back down. Mm-mm. And they have to climb all the way back down.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but there was a nice little byplay between our two, Sarah's
Dario
lover boy.
Dario was very rude to Jorah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like the, you must not have had much discipline as a child. None?
None. That's pretty. Also, I think we've given up all pretense that this guy is anything other but Dario, I mean, but like a California surfer guy. I mean, the way he talks and he's got his hair going.
I think he might be the most beautiful one.
He is pretty cute. Even I said, and I'm conceding that he's a cute feller.
Yeah, he's nice.
With his lady dagger.
With his lady, the way he sort of kisses his lady dagger. We're coming up on what I thought was the second. Well, actually, I think this technically in order was the third great joke because we skipped town.
Oh, yes. We'll get to town
after.
No,
we're moving to town is next.
Breaks.
Town is next. Oh, yep. When they were down and they were fighting, they're having their fist fight and Jorah's getting the living shit kicked out of him. And he grabs the sand and he throws it in the eye and he misses. And the guy goes, what? That was a funny little bit.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to town.
But we forgot one thing, which is that the whole point of that byplay on that hillside was in, like, oh, I'm teasing you, Jorah, you're old, you're tired, and I'm having sex with the queen and you're not, ha ha ha. Oh, you have grayscale, which was the whole point of the scene, that Dario finds that out. And if I was just going to say this about Dario, because it was instantly his attitude toward Jorah changes, which is nice, is probably why they had the scene. But if I knew that the person I was traveling with in close quarters had a lethal disease that is transmitted by casual contact that turns you into a raving, horrible monster lunatic, I would probably keep more distance from that person than you subsequently see them do as they sneak about.
As they sneak about.
Yes. There was quite a bit of sneaking about.
There's quite a bit of sneaking and quite a bit of hiding together in little shadows. And I kept looking for Dario to sort of do the thing where he sort of looks at him and just sort of edges away a little bit. I would.
All right, coming up in just a minute, we'll head to the rest of the Seven Kingdoms. Stick with us. You're listening to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I'm Trisha Bobita here with Greta Johnson and Peter Sagal.
So, town. This was the one time I yawned was in town,
now,
actually.
Now, why?
Because I thought it was boring.
Now, wait a minute. When we say town, do we mean the Red Keep or do we mean the Sept where they're keeping our formerly forgotten queen and royal brother-in-law, brother?
A fair question.
Yeah.
I think it was technically the Sept where I yawned.
Yes, with Jonathan Pryce as the High Sparrow giving his origin story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That every zealot has, which is the born-again story.
The born-again story. Although it was weird. It was a long story with not, I thought, a lot of a point. He talked about being a cobbler and then getting to be a successful cobbler and then throwing a big party and waking up with a hangover and going to hell with this and walking away. Could he have said that in about the period of time in which I said it?
Yeah.
I think he might have, and I don't think it would have lacked for any dramatic or emotional impact if he had just put it that way. Although it is great to see Jonathan Pryce do anything,
yeah,
including lengthy origin story monologues.
That's it was true. Quite an origin story, though. I mean, just in terms of length. I felt that, too, that like the monologue could have been cut in half and still would have been just as good. Because what is he trying to convince Marjorie of? That she should reject the fineries of life?
Yeah.
And that she should do what he did and walk out without his shoes? I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense that he's trying to convince her of anything. So, like, really, it feels like when he's doing these things, he's just pontificating.
Assuming, and this is a number of assumptions, that the High Sparrow was telling the truth in his conversations to Tommen, and then Tommen was telling the truth in the conversation with his mother, is he mentally preparing her, Marjorie, for her walk of shame? Because we find out later that that's what he has planned, which is going to spur his enemies in the Red Keep to action. For that whole scene of Marjorie sitting there listening to that monologue was uninteresting compared to the very short scene that followed, in which she went in and found her brother Loras, Sir Loras, who used to be pretty good looking.
The Knight of Flowers has seen better days.
He has, and I actually thought that was a more interesting scene because he's broken, which is nice to see that this is what happens to you if you throw you in a cell by yourself for a year or however long it's been. And Marjorie has balls. She's got the balls in the family. She's like, well, you know, this is not going to happen. We've got to be strong. You're like, yeah.
My note here says, Game of Thrones is so good at making people look dirty.
They really are. I mean, just the High Sparrow. I mean, it's like, you know, Jonathan Pryce is a wealthy, successful actor. He probably comes to the set in his nice suit, great hair. It's all right. Mr. Pryce, if you'd come into the trailer, we need to cover you with shit. And they probably have shit sprayers, people who are like second assistant shit sprayer.
Like spray tan. But
pretty much.
Spray
they
sully.
They are really good at covering people in filth.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Although no matter how much filth they all get covered in, and they do, Daenerys' hair is always perfect, which
unsinged.
I admire.
Unsinged?
Unsinged. No, it's not just that. It's shampooed and conditioned.
I do think that I love whenever we get to see the grandmother Tyrell.
Yes, Diana Rigg.
She's just so good. And that interaction there, too, revealed something to me that I had maybe never thought through and realized, which is that Uncle Kevin is actually the father of Lancel, who is the first sort of Lannister character we see become a brother monk of the High Sparrows.
Who, by the way, didn't Cersei sleep with?
Oh, yeah, a bunch.
Totally. Yeah, a total bunch. So she was like having sex with her cousin.
Yeah. When
which
Jamie
I guess by Cersei's
away.
Standards is like not bad. That's like casual dating by her scale. So I guess that's okay.
Yeah. And that he and also let's not forget Lancel is the one who poisoned Robert Baratheon in the first place when they were out on the hunt, right? Or gave him too much wine, but maybe there was something in the wine.
Yeah, Lancel was
involved. We're never really sure. He was involved in that plot.
There was another guy who got his throat punctured by the mountain in combat, but Lancel was somehow involved, yeah. So Lancel is expiating sins out there.
So we basically now have the Tyrell army is on its way to the Red Keep.
Two questions. Well, actually, one question.
To the Sept?
No, he says, at one point, Jamie says, you have the second largest army in Westeros. What's the first?
Is it theirs?
I don't know. If it's theirs, why didn't they use it?
Because the king has ordered not to.
Right.
He's told Kevin that he can't use his army because he's worried that there will be retaliation and that Marjorie will be hurt.
Right. So to get around that little problem, they've decided to use the Tyrell army and Kevan Lannister, the Hand of the King, will have nothing to do with it.
Yes, he'll stand down.
He'll stand down, whatever that means. Does that just mean just like throw up your hands and go, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Because
it's really hard to convince Tommen to do something different than he wants to do, except if you talk to him for 30 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a little strange. I mean, you know, he is, even for a teenager, wimpy. And
yeah,
sad,
you know, I think the other thing that's really bumming me out about King's Landing is that I love Jaime when he has potential to actually be a good guy.
Yeah.
And to watch him fight for Lannisters, I just find really...
He is one,
but I just, you know, like his
He's
moments...
He's like all that's left.
His moments with Brienne were so great, or even him with Tyrion, right? When he's sort of like, when he's playing the other side as much as he is being his own horrible person. And now I just feel like he's in this sort of like selfish, mired, like surrounded by people whining and not actually having any agency of his own. And
well,
just like,
I don't
Jamie,
know. I mean, consider his position, Greta.
I suppose.
His father is dead, killed by his brother. And why? Because he helped his brother get out of prison. So he must feel pretty bad about that. two of his children have been murdered. So I have a feeling he'd be sort of, you know, coming back to the familial fold, the embrace, yeah, if you will. And so I think his motivation at this point makes perfect sense. I mean, Cersei is all he has in the world. Have a little sympathy.
And Tommen.
Oh, Tommen.
The disdain in your voice.
Oh, God. Give me Joffrey any day over Tommen.
Oh,
Joffrey,
no.
At least, was interesting and evil.
Yeah.
Tommen is like, I don't know what to do. Oh, help me, mother. Oh, I wasn't supposed to tell you this. At least you got to take off his crown. The second big joke, I think, chronologically of the show was the Grand Maester Pycelle's exit.
Yes.
After Cersei discovers him counseling the king and says, you must leave. And he goes, clank, 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 clank. It was so Tim Conway in the old Carol Burnett show.
Perfect. Like, yeah. The oldest man in the world.
And then just watching him go. That was very funny.
So one noteworthy thing regarding the passage of time is Cersei says the trial is in a few days.
Right.
I just thought we would note that.
Yes.
I'm curious how many episodes that'll take for us to get to. Not
one
that it actually
know.
Means anything, but
yeah, I know.
Just thought it was noteworthy.
Yeah.
It's in a few days.
Right. Shall we head to the Iron Islands where there's
a brief moment?
A king's moot.
Wet Dorn. It is pretty dank out there.
Yeah.
So obviously Theon is back and they had a nice little moment. Brother and sister.
It was really a nice moment.
That's a brother and sister that's more like Greta's brother and sister, I think. Something you may have felt a little more emotionally familiar with that kind of dynamic.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Yara's actually kind of not pleased that he's back, in part because she's like, oh, really? You want to rule now? I've been here holding down the fort and doing all the work, and you're going to show up, and because you're a boy, you get to be king? And he's like, No, I don't want to be king.
It does occur to me that the people of Slaver's Bay who need another way to make a living could sell their cosmetics, especially the shampoo, to the people of the Iron Islands. We're looking pretty dank.
It's that sea breeze, you know, that really gets those waves going.
Right. So we're going to have a king's moot. And that, of course, is the meeting where they decide they're king. We know this because we've seen the previews, because Theon is there to help. How's he going to help?
He's going to end up getting it, right?
Ugh.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Can I say this? This is so funny. There was an article in the New York Times about Alfie Allen, mm-hmm, the actor who plays Theon, visiting New York to be a part of an America's Cup racing crew. And I said, oh, how interesting. Alfie Allen, in addition to being a fine actor, is also an experienced sailor. No, they brought him over to use as ballast. If you read the article in the New York Times, they say, well, what do you know about sailing? He says, I don't really know anything. But apparently somebody thought they could get publicity if Alfie Allen from Game of Thrones helped out with the America's Cup. So his job, Alfie Allen, and he's not a big guy,
right,
is to just sit there on the boat where they tell him to and not move. Which is so weirdly in keeping with where Theon is right now. I kind of love that.
That's
Mr. Allen, we'd like you to come to New York and just act as ballast. Okay.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, I think that Yara stays in charge because we've been seeing a theme, the tagline of the show,
that's true.
We recall, all men must die.
Yes.
We have a woman in charge in Dorne. We may soon have a woman in charge in the Iron Islands. Sansa seems like she's probably the one who's going to, like, stay in Winterfell if they win in Winterfell.
By the way, calling for a prediction, are we heading for a moment like, I'm trying to think, the death of Beatrix Lestrange in Harry Potter, which was done by Mrs. Weasley, if you remember?
Yes.
Are we heading for... Yes, says Greta.
It was so good.
Yeah. Are we heading for that kind of moment with Sansa and Ramsay?
I think so.
You think Sansa's going to deliver the blow, as it were?
I think so.
It would be satisfying.
She's going to say, not my brother, you bitch.
That would be awesome. I am no man, she could say. Right? There's a lot of things she could say.
Yeah, I do think...
You killed my father. I am Sansa Stark. You killed my father,
Prepare to die.
That would be
I am Sansa Stark. Your father killed my brother while my mother was then killed by someone else with his participation... Prepare to die.
doesn't roll off the tongue quite as
well.
Really,
no, not really. But we're looking forward to that.
Also, I would vote for Mandy Patinkin to join the show in any way, really. So
at this point, I would like Game of Thrones to be like the old Batman series where they were climbing up walls and celebrities would stick their heads out the windows. I think we have gotten to the point where all of us would just love that so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Anyway.
We have to be good nerds, but we can get like Colbert and Mandy Patinkin. People we know are fans of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be fun.
Okay. I don't know where they'd be. But anyway, moving on.
In Winterfell.
In Winterfell. Oh, apparently one of the things they're doing is they're saying, we're moving toward the end of this TV show. We're in the third act. Time for people to die.
Yep.
Everybody, nobody gets to like, oh, what happened to her? Oh, she retired. She has a nice little cottage somewhere. She grows vegetables. Nope. Sorry, Asha. Asha, right? That was her name?
Osha.
Osha. Osha. Yeah, there was. She's Osha, and then, yeah, Osha. And who I will always think of is Tonks. Because she played Tonks in the Harry Potter movies.
That's right. That's right.
Got it. I could not figure out the geography of knives.
Mm-hmm.
She
yeah.
was great. He had a knife, which he was, he had somehow acquired an apple in the middle of winter. It's all right. Looked good. He's eating his apple. He's got a knife. She grabs for a knife, but he has his knife. So what knife was she grabbing for? There was like another knife in the table?
I think he put down the apple and the knife, but then he just had a bonus knife. That's what I figured happened.
Yeah,
he just kind of like pulled it out of the
table. But then he had this totally cold moment of wiping her blood off the knife and then she's using it back on the apple. So the assumption is it's the same knife. It's not really that important.
I think the other knife was not the peeling knife, it was the like bread knife. It was like the knife and fork knife from his leftover food.
But did we really have to get rid of her that quickly? Couldn't she have hung around and been kind of insouciant? And
I think it does show the urgency of the fact that Sansa and Jon need to get down there stat. You know, like Ramsay is not screwing around with this.
No.
Yeah, and it did let us know that Ramsay knows that they're trying some sort of Trojan horse game by having Rickon and Osha there. That they weren't there to actually just give Rickon away, that they were there to try to
wait a minute.
Do
Ooh, slow down. What?
So have you looked into the Northern Lords theory at all?
No.
So there's a great theory that I think makes total sense, that the Northern Lords are all still totally with
the Starks.
With the Starks.
Yeah, as they would
and
be.
And that Umber didn't take a knee because he literally refuses to take a knee. And this is like a weird little shell kind of cooperation with the Boltons. And they're essentially just waiting until Sansa and Jon can get back.
Oh, I see.
And
so, but why, under that theory, why would Lord Umber bring...
Well, he's got to do something to actually gain Ramsay's trust, right? There is still that's the part...
If they're loyal to the Starks, he decides to play Ramsay Bolton by giving him a Stark?
That's the part that worries me, especially because...
it was a good plan.
I was talking to someone about it, and they were like, yeah, well, you know, I mean, he'll probably keep Rickon alive, right? Because that's how, you know, like, that's the best bargaining tool. But, like, we well know that Boltons can do quite a bit to a person and still keep them alive.
That's true.
You know?
It would be It would be cool to have Jon Snow, or maybe even Sansa, do one of those Aragorn in front of the Black Gates type speeches to the Northern Lords. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if the Wildlings and the Northern Lords got together and helped take down Winterfell.
That would be fun. And remember, we do remember that Melisandre said that she saw, when she saw that Jon was dead, she said, this can't be. I saw him in the flames fighting at Winterfell. Like I said, third act, things are moving. And that's almost a weird feeling with this show.
It is weird.
That things are actually moving toward conclusions, not necessarily the final conclusion, which will happen at the end. We decided there's going to be 1.5 more seasons after this.
HBO says they haven't decided yet. But the showrunners say that really, one more season, one more extended season maybe after
and
the
so
one we're in.
Things are, there's this huge creaking kind of aircraft carrier turning sense of changing momentum toward... final confrontations, i.e. Jon and Sansa now are arrayed against Ramsay, which, by the way, just to say in passing, that's where we more or less ended the book. One of the last things we saw in the book, last book published, was that really great letter.
To the traitor ambassador Jon Snow, you allowed thousands of wildlings past the wall. You have betrayed your own kind. You have betrayed the North. Winterfell is mine, bastard. Come and see. Your brother Rickon is in my dungeon. His direwolf skin is on my floor. Come and see. I want my bride back. Send her to me, bastard, and I will not trouble you or your wildling lovers. Keep her from me, and I will ride north and slaughter every wildling man, woman, and babe living under your protection. You will watch as I skin them living.
Go on.
She's more of the same.
Come and see.
Man. That's pretty creepy. Yeah.
Super creepy.
Super creepy. So, yeah, we're heading toward a confrontation there. And are we moving back to Vase Dothrak?
Yes.
Yeah, it's time.
The temple.
I want a little credit. A little credit. I want a little credit. Not as much credit as Trisha got for calling the Oathkeeper thing, but I want a little credit because I said something to the effect of, if Sarah's lover boy just rescue her, that would be boring. It would be more interesting if they show up. It goes wrong. She says no, 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 and does something much cooler and bigger on her own.
And she did.
And
that's
she did.
That's what happened.
Yes. thanks to some strangely flammable dirt.
That scene, did it seem really low budget to you?
Ieri voseci. Ieri vadrivoi.
Yes, strangely,
like,
yes.
The way the fire and everybody kind of cowering, it was just like, what is this?
Yeah. I think, again, this is a problem of having a larger television.
That what it is?
The larger the TV you watch it on, the dumber it all
No, you
looks.
Needed a guy on fire.
Seriously?
You needed,
yeah,
you needed
guy
at least
fire,
one guy
right.
on fire. And yeah. none of this, oh, no, big
like,
eyes.
Yeah, it was just
But
really
seriously,
weird.
All I could think of, all right, it's like, what, I don't know, Bronze Age technology. They use torches. Don't you think they'd be aware of the danger of things catching fire? And so she pushes over the brazier, which didn't seem like it was particularly stable to begin with, because she just get and the whole yep. place goes whoosh.
Yep, totally.
Don't they think they would have anticipated this, perhaps?
They edited out the scene where they were all dousing it in gasoline.
I know. I'm sure somebody is going to write in and say, but don't you understand? She's a Targaryen, and Targaryens have control over fire. But I don't know if that's established.
Hmm.
She's clearly immune. Now, did you guys? As a dramatic moment that played out in the scenario that I sort of crudely laid out, she does something cool to solve the problem. Were you satisfied by that solution?
I think it works because as soon as she realizes that the women would be on her side and kind of remembers that the Dothraki were actually on her side when she was able to show them
yeah.
who she was – and that she could, and that she understands that like great oratory can kind of sway these people, and her powers can sway these people.
Yeah.
I think it works. I think it makes sense that, you know, she's back where she first heard Khal Drogo make that speech, and she kind of recreates it, doing a dramatic walk around.
Yeah,
it's a little confusing to me why they let her sort of do the speech. It's a little bit like a villain speech,
yeah.
right? Where it's like no one bothers to interrupt or stop her. Really,
yeah,
they just let her make this long monologue.
And then they call her a bad word in Dothraki.
Several times. And threatened to have their horses
oh,
take her.
That was bad.
Yeah.
Ooh, we were
yeah.
wondering about, before we started, the bad word that they use in Dothraki, they call her that right before she kills them all. Was that word referring to the same anatomical part that the English word does, or is it a word referring to something else in Dothraki with the same horrible, insulting implications? Like Greta suggested, maybe it's a word that means legless horse. What's the worst thing a Dothraki could call somebody else? Like you,
well,
legless horse.
Maybe like a short-haired person.
If we have a chance, maybe.
Someone missing their beard?
A well-shorn man.
Yeah, could be. Anyway, I had two problems with it, even though it did fulfill what I hoped would be the dramatic arc. First of all, it's a superpower dodge. She
yeah.
used her superpower, which mm-hmm. is that she's immune to flames,
yeah.
which I think is not as interesting. It's like, when, how does Superman get out of it? Well, he flew away.
Yeah.
Most people can't fly away, although that's okay. The second thing is we've seen that before.
Yeah, literally that.
Literally that scene where she emerges from the flames and everybody goes, oh, my gosh. Also, and I think this is somewhat hilarious, this very morning, Greta and I got a Facebook message from a friend of mine, this guy who is a Marshall Scholar, one of the smartest human beings I've ever met, spent a long time in Europe and Asia for the Ford Foundation. He was an expert on Soviet Russia. He's now the president of a university, smart guy, writes in with this lengthy complaint.
It was lengthy.
Because he believed that the nudity warning prior to the show,
spoiler.
You know, there's a TV M, you know, includes violence, nudity, was a spoiler because by the time you got to the scene with Danny at the end, you hadn't seen enough nudity. Therefore, you could anticipate her clothes being burned off, thus bad on you, HBO. Just want to say, guy who spent his time writing us this lengthy complaint, one of the smartest human beings I know. And this is what this TV show has done to him.
Yep. First thing this morning. It was great.
It was pretty awesome.
It was pretty funny.
I am also going to say, based on two things. First of all, I read a thing where Amelia Clark said, no more nudity, guys.
Hmm.
And secondly, just talking, as I said earlier, to Lena Headey, who played Cersei and talked about her walk of shame, I don't think those were her boobies.
You know, my boyfriend said the same thing.
But Amelia Clark has said that she does not use a body double, that is all her.
Really? She said that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I am shot down by Amelia Clark with a bank shot off Trisha.
You know, I do think, I wonder the necessity of the nudity in that scene. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, maybe it would have been weirder if her clothes hadn't burned off. But
She's like the Hulk who gets to keep his pants
yeah,
when he transforms.
It's
like,
true.
She can't actually
the
have clothes
Hulk
on.
Hulk gets it, to keep his is, pants.
That is, you make a good point.
That would be
a,
even more superhero
although on
dodge.
The other hand, the fact that somehow her clothes didn't burn off in the conflagration would be no weirder than the fact that the sand was flammable. So
I think we just missed the scene where they doused everything in some sort of accelerant. That's all. They were short on time.
The arson investigators in Vestothrak are going to be hard at work. How did this go up so quickly?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but, all right. But so I'm just going to register a little bit of a complaint. It would have been cooler, for example, if she had been, by force of her will and personality, been able to convince the Dosh Kalin, the crones, to turn on their masters. That would have been fun. She had that little moment with that young one saying, he should have died sooner. Yeah, these guys suck. It would have been interesting to see that, but we got to move it along.
And they said most of those things in Dothraki, and we're going to hear from David Peterson, the inventor of the Dothraki and Valyrian languages, all the languages that are not English in Game of Thrones. This man is responsible for them. We'll talk to him in just a minute.
Now joining us is somebody who contributes a tremendous amount to Game of Thrones, although you never see him. You hear his work, though. His name is David Peterson, and he is the Conlanger, which is the term of art. That is, the guy who invented the foreign languages that you hear on Game of Thrones. David, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
My first question is, how does one get into the business of inventing languages, which you first did as a hobby? Is that right?
Yeah, I was creating languages for about 10 years before I got the opportunity to get paid to do it. And it's important to understand that I don't think anybody who created languages, including myself, ever thought that we would get the opportunity to be paid to do it. It was really kind of happenstance that it happened. In my case, it was first for Game of Thrones, which was pretty big.
Yeah, man, that's a pretty good first one.
Yeah, it's a good gig.
Yeah, it probably led either directly or indirectly to every single other job I had afterwards. You know, much bigger deal if your first show is Game of Thrones than something like Starcrossed on the CW.
How does one find oneself as a hobby inventing languages? Was painting little military miniatures not nerdy enough for you?
Oh, you know, a friend of mine did that, and it seemed it seemed really nerdy, honestly.
You were like, I'm never going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit around in my house and invent fake languages. That'll get me laid. Yeah. Is that what you said to yourself?
Well, I started when I was a linguistics major in college, and the only time I'd ever heard of anybody creating a language before was Esperanto. And in that case, the language was created for international communication. So I thought that I was the first person ever to create languages just for fun or just for my own personal use. And so I was quite struck when I met the members of the language creation community, some, you know, many decades older than I was.
I could talk to you all day about the pleasures of creating languages, but we obviously were interested in Game of Thrones. So we wanted to talk to you about the job that you were given. So they came to you. And they, I'm assuming now, you can tell me, they said, hi, we're producing this TV show. It's based on these fantasy books you might be familiar with. We need you to invent languages for these people. Was it at first Dothraki? Was that the job? Or do they also say, we're going to need you to do High Valyrian and whatever else may come up?
No, this was just Dothraki because this was just for the internal pilot that they showed to HBO in order to convince them to greenlight the series. And of course, they didn't come to me. I guess I forgot to mention this, but it was a competition amongst language creators. The Language Creation Society ran the competition since they were language creators and knew what they were doing, but it wasn't a very good bid process in that the bids that we did was essentially do the entire job and then we'll decide.
And you were like, okay. Had you heard of Game of Thrones before you got this assignment or heard of this assignment?
I had heard of it because my wife was a big reader of science fiction and fantasy. And I'd heard of these books through reputation, namely that the author had a penchant for killing off your favorite characters and that you probably shouldn't start reading them because they're not done yet.
Right. Yes.
Man,
good advice.
Clever human.
At the risk of asking you to be immodest, why did you win this competition, do you think? Why did they pick you?
Well, it was an open-ended competition, so I think that some of those who competed did the amount of work that they should have been asked to do.
They had more self-respect about working for free, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Which is, here's some samples of what I might provide you if you, in due course, hire me, as you should in a free market, to perform this work for you. As opposed
Indeed.
To, and just, but you just did the whole thing? Is that what you're saying? Here's your dictionary.
There was no limit on the amount of material you could provide. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, well, obviously this is a Cold War now.
You're like, well, I've tricked
massive
them.
Retaliation.
And so it's like I realized that there was going to be one person who was going to do the most work possible. And so I figured, well, I guess that might as well be me because I really want this job. And so I did.
One of the things that I've always heard is that language creates thought. Like, I know this from Orwell, that if you change the language, you change what people can think. Did you, when you started thinking about Dothraki in addition to issues of grammar, and by the way, I recommend both you've published a Dothraki glossary dictionary and also a new book, The Art of Creating a Language, I think it's called.
Art of Language Invention.
The Art of Language Invention, which gets into amazing technical detail about how this is done. And it's really amazing and impressive and incomprehensible to me. But did you, just to be honest,
yeah.
But did you think to yourself, what do the Dothraki people think? What do they need to talk about? For example, you would assume they would have, much as the cliche about Eskimos and snow, that they would have 50 words for horse. Did you put yourself in that kind of mindset, like a dramatic kind of thinking?
I can give you a super long answer to this question, but I'll try to give you the short one. In effect, Orwell is wrong. No, you cannot control thought with language to that extent. The extent to which our languages actually shape our worldviews or perceptions, the extent is very, very minor and very, very technical. Just to give you a quick example, I forget the company, but somebody mentioned that this company called when somebody was being fired or laid off, they called it graduating, which sounds wonderful. But I mean, I don't care what you call it. You cannot trick people into not realizing that they're being fired. You know, language is not that powerful.
I love the idea that David Peterson Conlanger has just called bullshit on George Orwell. I think that's great. Let the word go forth.
I don't know.
I feel like that's really interesting, especially, you know, we gave you a couple of sentences to translate, which we're going to get to in just a second. But I thought it was really interesting. You said that there are no words for please or thank you or sorry in Dothraki. And I feel like that tells you a lot about the Dothraki people, though, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it does. Like, it tells you something about the culture is what I'm saying. It's like, because there is the language and then there's how people choose to use it.
Okay.
Like, for example, it tells you something about the culture of that job or that company that they decided to use graduate for being fired. It tells you something about the actual choices that they're making in the way that they decide to present themselves. So that's kind of the thing with Dothraki, where it's like if you're talking about kind of a stereotypical conversation between the Dothraki men and the Dothraki warriors, they choose to present themselves in a very specific way. And so it's like if you want to gel with that, then you too have to present yourself in a very specific way in order to, you know, not be killed.
Which just goes to show I do very poorly in Vase Dothrak.
I give you kind of the equivalent of that in one of these phrases when we get to it.
Shall we go through them?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll tell you. It
was Greta's idea, I think, that we should come up with, I mean, because you've published dictionaries and glossaries for people who are interested in the language and the technique of creating Dothraki, as well as your other languages. But we thought what we could really be useful is a phrase book in case you end up there.
Yeah, there you go.
In the classic.
If your dragon drops you off.
Exactly, which happens. So I wrote down some phrases that might come up if I, for example, ended up in the Dothraki Sea. So here we go, and we've asked you to translate them, and you'll provide the translation. Here we go. So we'll start with, hello, how are you?
Macho Maroon. Hashefka Dothrajek.
That sounds vaguely friendly.
Like Dothraki.
That sounds vaguely
friendly.
It still
sounds a little menacing, but yeah.
Yeah, a little menacing. A little menacing. My name is Peter. What is your name?
Hakke ani Peter. Fin hakke shefki.
Again, very friendly so far. Where may I find something to eat that is not horse?
Finne vecha hadaeni finne vos razer.
I did not mean to insult your food. I am sorry. So if a Dothraki does have to apologize or to make amends or to say something like, okay,
my bad,
what did they say? Did you include that? Or did the scriptwriters never ask you to say that?
Well, of course, it never comes up. Nobody's apologizing in Game of Thrones. But this is how I translated that. So anharayo etzomosa. What that means is I have shamed myself.
Oh, wow. That's something I would probably say.
Yeah, Peter does shame
also useful
himself
for
often.
The phrase. But.
Yeah, I would also soiled myself. I think there are a lot of things. Sort of transitive verbs.
So that's a reflexive, right?
Exactly, reflexive verbs.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Did you, and parenthetically, before we move on, we have more. They send you the scripts. You talked about this in your presentation. I saw they send you the scripts. This is what we want the characters to say. Here it is in English. Please translate it. I'm assuming that you've gone far beyond that you've come up with words, phrases, cases grammar for stuff that hasn't come up in the scripts yet.
Oh,
only
yeah.
Because you seem like a real completist.
I mean, you got to have the whole thing. You got to have the whole thing. The second you're translating one full sentence, you need the entire grammar there because all of it hangs together. I mean, one construction will depend maybe crucially on a different one that doesn't exist. It may show up only once in the entire series, but it has to be there.
Right.
And then it also helps for doing other stuff. Like, for example, I have not used previously the auxiliary for the kind of perfect that has the reflexive attached to it. I've never used it before, but I needed it here today.
So I have shamed myself, right? That's what I'm talking about?
Really?
Rayo. It's kind of like have or already or yet, and it's got the reflexive built into it. And I created it, but I never used it until now.
That's
all right.
Cool.
Well, here's the next one, which is after I did not mean to insult your food. The horse meat is delicious. Thank you.
Dingavet razifi vezvena.
But there is no thank you.
Really, there isn't? I find that odd.
There's a story behind that,
please.
So, when I was applying for this Dothraki competition, I produced over 300 pages of material that I sent to them. And then I gave them kind of a fun little bullet point list that was on one page. And one of the things I said is that Dothraki had X number of words for this, this, and that, but it doesn't have a word for please. And I think they liked that because then they changed the pilot script when they reshot the bits of the pilot. And they added this line that Dothraki had no word for thank you, which I did not
It's in the show.
That's in their directing.
It's in the show. My gosh, I forgot about that.
Huh.
Yeah, but that one didn't come from me. That one came from them. But of course, after it became a part of the show and became canon, I felt like, well, I guess I'd better keep to that then.
Yeah. So when a Dothraki wants to express gratitude to somebody, they just kind of like give them a thumbs up. I mean, what do? They
it's
just
that sort of, head nod.
It's the head
know,
nod. Hey,
that,
man.
Yeah.
Hey.
Or you say something like, you know, Yerjomoyan. You've honored me.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's nice.
We have
so
a couple
it's honor
more.
And then shame.
Well, I'll ask you to do one more, which is, I like your braid. It is very masculine.
Me Allah yafa anna jinja haksafkua. Me mahraj vina.
Did that work out? Were you able to handle that without having to stretch? I mean, you can compliment people
kinda,
in Dothraki.
I kind of coined a word on the fly there, which was masculine. But I think that if a Dothraki heard it, it would make sense to them. They'd probably laugh at you for saying something a little silly, but it would make sense to them.
I'm glad they have a sense of humor. I think that's important.
I'll just end with a compliment. I think that, like I said, looking through your books, the techniques that you use are literally beyond my comprehension. I have no idea what you're talking about. But just as a civilian watching it, the absolute complexity makes it seem real in a way that the book certainly didn't. George R. R. Martin's half-hearted attempts to do it. And I can't think of any other created languages that have come across as real as yours have. It just adds a tremendous amount to the enjoyment of the show, and I can't thank you enough for it.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate it. It's always nice to know that there are people out there watching and appreciating, as opposed to saying, why do I have to read these subtitles?
And in keeping with the Dothraki ethos, I would be honored to eat your living, beating heart. Is that something they would say?
Yeah, I guess so.
It sounds about right. Awesome. Well, David, thank you very much for joining us. This was really fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Or in Valyrian, since there's no thank you in Dothraki, kirim vose. There you go.
I'm sorry. We have to take another 20 minutes and talk about High Valyrian.
No.
Sorry you brought it up.
That's hilarious.
No, next time. Thank you, David.
Thanks to David Peterson for joining us. We'll be back next week with more of your voicemails, listeners, so keep calling.
Yes, we really want you to join the conversation. You can ask a question or suggest a topic for us to discuss on upcoming episodes of Nerdette Recaps. You can call us and leave a voicemail. The number is 312-948-4687.
Or they can just do what they all seem to love to do, which is point out my errors on Twitter.
Yes,
yeah,
please keep
really
doing
fun.
That, too. It's fun for us.
Yeah, he is at Peter Seigel on Twitter, and we are at Nerdette Podcast. You can also find us online at nerdettepodcast.com, and we're on Facebook and all that good stuff, too.
Throw some stars and write a review if you're feeling generous, as Fish2605 did on iTunes. They say that Peter is okay, too, you know, but patriarchy when they're saying nice things about our show. So,
yes.
Peter, you're okay.
I'm okay. I am tolerable.
This show is produced by us with help from our WBEZ cohort, especially Joe Dassault and Robert Anderson. Thanks also to our interns, Maya Cole and Sebrin Mallard.
Can I just point out, say, Sebrin Mallard is a great Game of Thrones name?
It is a good
Lord, Sir Sebrin Mallard. of he's of the house duckling. I have no idea.
Sigil is definitely a duck.
Yo, that's gotta be.
Joel Meyer is our executive producer, and our theme music was composed by Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music.
House Mallard, our words are quack.